And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right. Karate chopping our way through a Wednesday here. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. One Bills Live is the show. And plenty of news and notes to get to you surrounding the Bills, the NFL at large.
Yeah.
It's a pivotal week, as we know. And the Bills could get or could be in line for a cavalry call, Steve. The cavalry might be coming.
Well, they got some big boys showing up. Spencer Brown, John Feliciano, Starlo Tulele, all back off the COVID list and back off the injured list. Huge.
Yeah, John Feliciano was back at practice. He has not been activated off IR yet. That could still be forthcoming.
Right.
But he is practicing, so that's a good sign. And Latulele and Spencer Brown are both off of the COVID reserve list. Incidentally, offensive tackle Tommy Doyle was put on the COVID reserve list yesterday. So they get one tackle back, and they lose another to the COVID reserve list. As
right.
we know, in Western New York, the positivity rate for new cases is pretty high right now. It's about 10%. So you just got to, you know, be careful, stay vigilant. And unfortunately, it's claiming players around the league. I believe 9 players tested positive yesterday. The positive cases in the league this year has already exceeded that of last year. And last year was pre-vaccine. They didn't have a vaccine
right.
yet last season.
Right.
And you've got more cases this year.
It's kind of
already after 12 weeks than you did all of last season.
Yeah, I think I said this to somebody today. I think every single person on the planet is going to get that virus. There's no dodging.
Yeah.
You can now the vaccines There's, alleviate the yeah. symptoms. I mean, they'll save some lives. Some people won't get, you know, go to ICU and have a ventilator because of it, which is good, but everybody's going to get it.
What are we going on, like 20 months now? I think the biggest lesson we've learned is the virus kind of runs the show. You know, all the preventative efforts you can take, all the work that some of the best scientists in the world and epidemiologists in the world are doing, and they're doing great work. The virus runs the show. Nobody else is setting the agenda.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The virus sets the agenda, and we all just react.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's the way it's gone here, and being proactive, you know, in terms of slowing the spread is something that we all can do. But in terms of controlling the narrative, the virus has that in spades. So hopefully we don't keep seeing players' availability lost due to winding up on the COVID reserve list. The Steelers had another player land on the COVID reserve list today, offensive lineman Joe Haig. So, it's not just here in Buffalo. It's everywhere. Across the league. I mean, the Cowboys, they have a whole slew of guys.
Right, including the head coach.
And Amari Cooper, who is now he's off the COVID reserve list. He's still suffering from symptoms. He's not contagious anymore, but he's still dealing with recovery from the virus. May not be able to play tomorrow night when the Cowboys play against the Saints. And the newsflash, Cowboys need the game.
Yeah.
And they might not have their number one wideout. Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah, and in all that stuff's going on with COVID, with all these different teams. You've got also now teams are starting to get at this point a little bit desperate. The Giants signed Jake Fromm off our practice squad.
Yeah, that was the other news we were going to get.
That was so all these roster. And for those of you who don't realize, a practice squad, you're a free agent, but you're practicing with a team. So any other team anywhere in the league can reach out and say, you know what? That cornerback in Seattle's practice squad or, you know, whatever, you can go out and snatch him.
You have to put him on your active roster.
But they got to be active.
And most players don't say no to that because it is a huge bump in pay.
Sure.
Because the minimum salary on an active roster is significantly more than the pay you get on a practice squad. Sometimes, on occasion, if a club that has the player on their practice squad wants to hold on to them, they can often block the move by saying, hey, if you stay here, we'll elevate you to our active roster now. We think that much of you. We want to keep you. We'll create a roster spot for you to stay instead of going to whoever.
Plus, there's like four spots every week that they can protect guys on the practice squad. So the guys that they really think a lot of, they'll protect anyway.
But that's only 4 out of 16.
Right. There's 16 guys on the list. That means a dozen are not protected. Yeah. And the Bills and most other teams wait till late in the week to protect the last couple of guys. You know, they'll protect two or three, but they'll keep one or two slots open on their protected list in case they get an injury or a COVID guy, and then they protect the guy that they really need, or they may get being taken by somebody. So there's a little bit of gamesmanship there about how they work the protected list. But yeah, a guy like Jake Fromm, he's vulnerable to being picked up.
So Fromm got picked up by the Giants, and the main reason why was because Daniel Jones has been dealing with, I think, what was it, a neck injury? He's got like a bad neck or something. And his availability for Sunday has been called into question.
Right.
Now, I've seen subsequent reports this morning as Joe Judge addressed the media down there in New York and New Jersey and basically said there's a chance that Daniel Jones might even practice today.
Right.
So we'll have to see where that goes. But they were taking no chances. So they add Jake Fromm to their roster. He's obviously going to serve. He would serve as the emergency third string quarterback in the event that Daniel Jones was down this week. And Mike Glennon would be the starter. I can't remember who the backup was, but he would be the emergency third string since he really doesn't know the Giants offense from a hole in the ground right now. So Fromm is in the Giants facility today, probably cramming and trying to learn as much of the offensive system as he can. So that was the other bit of news. And then there were reports this morning that this has not been confirmed by the team yet, but there are reports this morning that they're going to make another practice squad addition, and they're going to add former Washington cornerback Greg Stroman to their practice squad. Earlier this week, they added a cornerback, Tim Harris, who was with the Bills for about a week at the end of preseason and then didn't get added to the 53-man roster. And so he's back now as they try to bolster their ranks at the cornerback position after losing Tre'Davious White for the rest of the year with a torn ACL suffered in the Thanksgiving night game.
At this point, it's just a numbers game. I got to have a guy to replace him, and they wanted at that spot.
Yeah,
but there's no. They're not going to go to this guy for reps in the game.
No. They're just getting people in the pipeline.
Right. Exactly.
More than anything else.
Exactly. They're preparing. It's insurance policy. But you know that there's still huge question marks about what this defense will look like without Tre'Davious White. It's going to look different. It's been highly effective. They have, and as the season rolls on, it's apparent that the Bills have not played a juggernaut of a schedule versus offenses. They're going to do that this week. They're playing a really good offense and a really good defense this week, and you know everybody's got to step up. So it's going to be in a game that's this massive. You really got to play your best, and all these personnel moves and all this. You know, when you get your starters back on, certainly the Bills should be a stronger team up front on both sides of the ball. But we'll have to wait and see as to how this all works out. And, you know, you lose guys like Jake Fromm and you bring guys in like the DB, you can't get distracted from what's really important as the week rolls on. You're trying to prepare on the field. It's really going to be an interesting game. It's really going to be a fun game for both Patriot fans and Bills fans.
Yeah, something tells me it's going to be a nail-biter. As much as we expect Buffalo's defense to change because of who is in there and – head coach Sean McDermott in his press conference with the media yesterday all but assured that it will be Dane Jackson getting the bulk of the work in Tre'Davious White's absence. Leslie Frazier, who we'll hear from a little bit later in the show, all but confirmed that they're not going to be able to do some of the things they did with Tre'Davious in the lineup because they would call certain defenses where they'd just be like, okay, Trey, you just take care of their number one. We're going to handle some other stuff over here
right.
and play this way because he can take care of that over there. And now that part of their defense does not exist. And so it takes some of the options away from Coach Frazier in terms of the comfort level in calling certain defenses as he has in the past, knowing Trey can kind of lock down a number one wideout of the opponent.
There's different philosophies about doing that as well, about ways to compensate. For instance, it's like some people say, well, what are they going to do? They're going to put Levi Wallace on the number one and let him try and hold up and you know, do this other stuff over here. I think one thing that may happen, and it won't happen a lot, but they'll put Dane Jackson on the number one and double the number one with Dane and another player, you know, Poyer, Hyde, Milano, you name it.
Yeah.
They'll double the number one and then do what they can do with the rest of it, you know, and Levi Wallace will take the number two or man up on the number three, take the three away, and then everybody else takes care of the C. So you take away something in the offense with whatever you can, and you do what you can with the rest. I mean, that's football. So you take away something.
We mentioned last week how Steve was named to the semifinalists list for the Pro Football Hall of Fame class of 2022. We want to pass along some congratulations to Bills defensive coordinator and assistant head coach Leslie Frazier, who has been named among the finalists for the Black College Football Hall of Fame class of 2022. Leslie Frazier played his college ball at Alcorn State, a historically black college, and also the alma mater of one Steve McNair, the late Steve McNair. So congrats to Coach, and we'll see where it goes if, in fact, he gains induction into the class of 2022. We'll pass it along to you, but nice to see him on the finalist list there, especially after his pro career was cut short by a bad knee injury. I mean, his career was just getting off the ground in Chicago with a very good Bears defense, and a bad knee injury prematurely ended his career. So nice to see his college days getting some recognition by the Black College Football Hall of Fame. So we'll see where that goes. We'll keep you updated, keep you posted, let you know if he gains induction. Also, an update on you, Bills Mafia. As we know, you have been feverishly donating to the Northwest Louisiana Food Bank. And we did see a tweet by the Bills Mafia Babes providing an update that the total raised thus far, $108,000. So bravo to you and everyone out there who was unquestionably in the giving spirit. And I don't know what it is, but the Bills fan base, their ability to turn negatives into positives is just fantastic. There's no other way to say it. The team lost their best cover corner, probably one of the top three players on the defensive side of the ball on this roster. It's horrible. And, you know, Bills Mafia steps up to the plate and they flip the script and turn this negative for the team into a positive for the greater good. So salute to you guys again. I mean, you've done it time over time, and I got to say, it reflects so well on the people that, you know, Steve and I run into every day here in Western New York. It's nothing new to us, but it puts such a good spotlight on Western New York as a whole.
Yeah, it's
really great.
It's an extra layer of consideration that people have towards a franchise that, you know, represents a, you know, this region, and how the region responds to the franchise. It's unique. It's absolutely unique in not only in professional, you know, in the NFL and professional football, but also other fan bases and other sports. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And it's not you thought 3 or 4 years ago when the Andy Dalton thing and all that happened, you thought it was a one-off. Not so much.
No, I mean, Josh Allen's grandmother passes. Right, Josh Allen's. That gets up to $1 million. I mean, my God.
This is already up to six figures already. Yeah.
And I should say, it's not just Bills fans in Western New York. It's Bills fans all over the country that are participating in this. But I still think it reflects very favorably on the kind of people that live here in Western New York or the transplants that live elsewhere now.
Right, and I just got to tip my hat, and there's really – I mean, what can you say? It's above
good
and beyond.
On you, man.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And Never seen anything like it, and it's something that I know that the fans are very proud of the football team and the way it's playing. This, from being inside the building with Brownie and me and all the team and the organization is really proud of the fan base, right? That's the unusual part about this. It really makes them proud. They show up on the road, they do all this stuff, and they do stuff on behalf of things that have nothing to do with the, you know, the Northwest Louisiana Food Bank. What?
Yeah.
Andy Dalton. You know, of course, Josh Allen and his grandmother. I mean,
they're good, they're good causes.
They're fantastic
causes. They're reputable causes, you know, but the point I think Steve's trying to make is people that live in Western New York aren't seeing a dime of that.
Right.
They're not benefiting from that directly.
It's not going into the coffers of this club by any stretch.
Well, right. And I think the best part, nobody asked them to do it. That's the best part.
That's the amazing part about it.
The free will. The free will of the fan base just saying,
and they say,
yeah, I'm good with that.
I know
$27.
I know it sounds trite to say, well, hey, Mafia's family. But, you know, some member of the family just says, hey, you know what, guys? Let's do this. And everyone's like, hey, yeah, it's a good idea. You know, it's like they all have this same kind of ilk towards going, oh, that's a great idea. I'll do that too.
The way they're able to mobilize is
that's
impressive.
Pretty amazing. And I get it too. It's a different world with social media stuff, and they can reach out very quickly, and they have a lot of followers. But man, oh man, the word spreads, and you know, $27, I'll give it.
Yeah.
It's no problem. And that's it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. It's really it goes beyond your ability to put into words how cool that is.
Yeah.
How unbelievably needed.
Really, really cool. No question about it. So good on you guys for doing that on behalf of Tre'Davious White and his charity of choice. Twitter conversation today deals with some of the good news with this roster getting some players back. Which returning player expected to be in the lineup Monday? Nothing set in stone yet, although things are certainly looking good for the return of people like Star Lotulelei and Spencer Brown and John Feliciano. But which returning player expected to be in the lineup Monday night against the Patriots will have the biggest impact? And your choices are Spencer Brown and John Feliciano, Star Lotulelei, Dane Jackson in his new starting role, or Isaiah McKenzie in a potential return to the lineup. And out in front are the two linemen. This is so Western New York too, isn't it? Offensive line winning a poll. How many other NFL cities does that happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Seriously, they've got three quarters of the vote right now in early polling. So be sure to go on
Say that. Well, you and I go, I got to take some credit for this because I've been pounding the desk and standing on the table as that
you're
being
gonna
the
take
answer
professor credit here.
To the fact that in the offseason I said if you want a run game to get better, work on the offensive line. And the offensive line, while the running game has been better than it was a year ago, the offensive line has been shuffled so much in this first 8 to 10 games of the season. New starting lineup. They got Spencer Brown finally made his way into it. Now they got injuries and they got COVID. So it's been a mess for 6 to 8 weeks. And it does kind of coincide as well to the shuffling of the offensive line does coincide with the win one, lose one kind of stretch that the Bills have been having.
I've got some details on that, which we'll get into in a second.
And I just think, I just say my work here is done. The fan base is on my side. I'm claiming
I have won them
I'm
over.
Claiming it as a win.
That is a victory for
Put
me.
Put that on the whiteboard. That's one for us.
but we want your thoughts on it, too, because I think there is an argument to be made for Star Lotulelei as well. This is a physical offensive front that the Patriots bring to the table. We know they run the tar out of the ball with Ramondre Stevenson and with Damian Harris, and even to a lesser extent with Brandon Bolden. It is a true committee backfield, and they just keep rolling them at you one after the other, and it's why they're one of the better running teams in football, and they do that with a purpose, not to just roll up yards and score points, but to control the tempo of the game. And I think that is of paramount importance for the Patriots in this game, maybe more than any other team they faced, because this is a team, the Bills, who can score in a hurry if you're not careful. And I think you want to control the tempo all the more with your running game. So I think Star Lotulelei should probably be getting a little bit more support here in this poll
yeah.
than he has at the outset.
We know this about the Patriots. Their ability to be disciplined and assignment sound. They really make no mistakes. And the ability, there's three things about them that we've all noticed over the years. One, their ability to be sound. They don't make mistakes and they make you pay for yours. Secondly, they play physical. Even when they're undermanned or outgunned, they still play physical up front. They've got the ability to go after people. And third, and the thing that's really makes them hard to play, even for a Bills defense with Starlo Tulele in or out, is their ability to transform what their identity is from week to week. Now, it's been limited a little bit with Mac Jones at quarterback. They're kind of who they are this year, but we've seen it in the past where they'll come out and run it 35 times and throw it 17 times, or throw it 35 times and run it 17 times, and vice versa in given weeks. Or they'll come out and there'll be a pressure defense one week and there'll be a coverage defense the next. Their ability to be a chameleon kind of identity makes it hard for a team playing them to know exactly what you're going to get from them. So they're hard to prepare for. So all those stuff rolled in is what has given us scar tissue about playing these guys. And because we've lost games over the years every way imaginable. And it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is going to be much different this year. Although you may get a better idea of who they are because their young quarterback, he kind of focuses their yeah. ability to not transform completely week to week. But man, oh man, they're still good and physical up front. That's why Star Lotulelei's presence may be something that the Patriots are going, oh man, I wish we'd had another week without him.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it wasn't only Star that they've lost recently. Justin Zimmer went on IR, and he was out of the equation. And, you know, they had two practice squad call-ups, Ilyanku and, you know, Brandon Bryant.
Right.
Had to come up the last 2 weeks just to kind of help fill the gaps, so to speak. But which returning player expected to be in the lineup Monday night against the Patriots will have the biggest impact? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live, where you can weigh in and vote on the poll. But let's go to the phones, and leading us off today is Russ in Buffalo. Russ, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hi. I was just wondering if Deion Dawkins having COVID, is that why he's having not such a great year this year? Is because he's still feeling the effects of COVID?
Well, Coach McDermott was asked that question, I want to say 2 to 3 weeks ago, and Coach McDermott pretty much confirmed that he is fully recovered from his bout with COVID. Now, you know, so all indications are he is 100% clean bill of health and good to go. I mean, Deion did tell us, you know, that it did take him some time to recover, get his conditioning back, all of that stuff. But all indications are he's got a clean bill of health. There's no denying his play has been uneven this season.
Yeah, and I would say this as well. I mean, I don't know that Deion's had – well, I think more so than having a bad or down year, I think he's having an inconsistent year. And that speaks a lot about where the entire offense has been. And some of that has been different guys playing next to him and having a shuffling going on around him and asking different things of him week to week because of that.
It's been Feliciano or Butker.
I think it's an up and down year for all those guys up front, and until they get the same five guys in there for maybe more than a week or a half at a time, they're gonna continue to go on a little bit of a roller coaster ride. And I think Dawkins is the poster boy for that.
Yeah. But when you're known as the linchpin of the line, you got to play consistent ball.
The only guys –
Morse has played pretty consistently this season.
Morse is the guy – and Morse and Feliciano – are not Morse and Dawkins are the only two guys that have taken – have played every game in that spot. I mean, they've been pretty solid and the only guys that have not moved or played a different spot. Yeah. So there is that. And I do, and I agree with you. I think Morris has played had best
very
year as a Bill.
Season, let's go back to the phones, and we go to Mark on a cell. Mark, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, I got a question. I believe the Bills defensively have to make some adjustments and show some things they typically never do. And I just wonder if you guys think this is possible, if even feasible. Lining up in a 3-4, especially Latulele coming back, I don't know what they would do on the ends, if they would just go with the biggest people or if they would go with pass rushers or what they would do there. But I believe I would like to see Edmonds and Milano on the ends right in the face of those two tight ends and put Davis and Klein in the middle and go from there. And I think that might even free up the safeties to help the corners a little bit more. I don't know if that's a possibility, if you think we have the personnel to do something like that. But I think we need to come out, and I'm not saying play that as a base defense all night long. I'm saying certain situations or whatever, throw something like that at them. Because I really get frustrated when I watch tight ends get free releases off the lines of scrimmage, which they do all the time against the Bills defense. I don't know what it is. I know it's a complaint of Bills fans all over the place that why do we always let tight ends kill us? And even if they are killing us, why don't we do something different? Put a linebacker in one of these guys' faces and disrupt them. So I don't know if you guys think that's feasible or not, but it's just a thought I had.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Mark. We'll address that. I think it's a big ask, even with the benefit of a few extra days to prepare, to ask this defense to suddenly do something they haven't done for the better part of the last five seasons. You don't go throwing out the baby with the bathwater when, what are you on the season? The number one defense in football? That's not the time to change your spots. You want to throw a couple of curveballs within the scope of your scheme, I'm all for that. But coming out and playing a 3-4, I don't know. That seems extreme, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a little. If you want to disrupt the tight end off the ball, you can do that without going all the way to a 3-4 defense.
Just crack him at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, you just got to get either the defensive ends or a linebacker or safeties or whatever to bang those guys as
no
they
free release.
Like a defensive end coming up the field and the running back coming out of the backfield chips the defensive end to help the offensive tackle block that defensive end. Conversely, the defensive end can chip the tight end as he rushes the passer on his way to the quarterback and his way to through the offensive tackle. You can do it the same both ways. I don't think and plus, you know, you're asking Milano and Edmonds to play a completely different position than where they've been playing for 5 years. It's a big ask.
And those guys are up on the line a lot anyway. Now, they don't always rush, but those double A-gap looks that they have – you know, when they look like they're coming, who's dropping out. They do that a lot. They're up there. I know
right.
A lot of people have talked about trying to get Tremaine Edmonds' length on the edge. He did some of that at Virginia Tech and was successful. So I understand the premise. And who knows? Maybe you do line him up outside
right.
A few times to rush on an overload or something like that. But you're not changing your entire defensive scheme to accommodate
they're
those
one of the
changes.
Top defenses in the league. So the question is, more so than, hey, should we throw this is what do the Patriots think about it? What are they going to do?
Yeah,
that's the big question. What are the Patriots going to do against this Bills defense? Not that I don't think they'll be successful or have a plan, but that's what you really want to know as a Bills player, as a Bills fan, as a Bills coach, because then you can have answers for it. You want to know what the Patriots think about the way you run your 4-3 with Taron Johnson on the field all the time and only two linebackers. How are they going to attack it with those two, you know, Janu Smith and
Hunter Henry,
two tight ends? What are the Bills going to do against that? And what are the Patriots going to do to counter it? That's what you want to know. It's not so much that coming out of the blue with some alignment that the Patriots have never seen. All you really need to do is figure out real quick what the Patriots think about your defense and how they're going to attack it.
Which returning player expected to be in the lineup Monday night against the Patriots do you think will have the greatest impact? Choices are there for you on Twitter at OneBillsLive, so be sure to vote in the poll. Richard in Rochester, Patrick in Rochester, hang tight. We got to go to a break here, but we'll get to you when we return. We'll also be hearing from defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier and offensive coordinator Brian Daboll as both of them addressed the media late yesterday. All that coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Buffalo Bills would like to thank this week's game sponsor, ECMC. bringing hope and healing to Western New York. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Going to go back to the phones here as we have been discussing with you which returning player expected to be in the lineup Monday night against the Patriots do you think will have the biggest impact? This on the heels of the news that Spencer Brown and Star Lotulelei have been removed from the COVID reserve list and John Feliciano is back practicing, though he is still on injured reserve as of right now. Your choices are there at One Bills Live on Twitter. So vote on the poll, let us know where you stand, or give us a call at 803-0550, which is where we go now to Richard in Rochester. What do you have for us, Richard?
Hey, guys. I wanted to tell you that I'm pretty much housebound, and I love you guys in the afternoon. You really brighten my day. Even when your obsessions with ham is talked about, I'm still right there with you. I'm not real happy that you guys lost an hour, but 2 hours is better than none.
Yeah, agreed. Thanks. Very nice of you to say, Richard. Glad we can brighten your day.
Steve, I wanted to talk to you about your health condition there. We're praying for you. I hope you're able to overcome your inability to speak without wearing your glasses.
Oh, wow. We got
good
a comedian
one, Richard.
Here.
Yeah, good call. Go ahead. I appreciate that.
One more thing. I've noticed on kickoffs, the kicking team, even if the ball's kicked out of the back of the end zone, the kicking team runs to the end zone. And I wondered if that was superstition or do they have bets on the side about who can get there first? But for no reason, they just keep running through the end zone.
They do it just for kicks and giggles, and they may have, you know, they may have something. They study the film. They may say, all right, who you know, who's the guy that finished the play, you know, and you know they run until the play until the whistle's blown.
Yeah, if you got an old school coach that wants you running through on every play, you better put that on film when they're reviewing it on Monday.
Yeah, you're right. There's absolutely no reason for it, and I think back now that you mentioned that, Richard. Let me take my glasses off so I can speak. When we played, there was a few times when I wasn't feeling my best or I was dragging something, you know, an injury or my ankle was hurting or whatever. And we kicked it out of the end zone and I stopped. I just stopped running immediately. So I didn't have to run, you know. That happened few and far between, but I know that's the case for some guys. And you know, when you're trying to drag something through. I remember thinking, I think maybe there's one time during my career when I did that and I stopped running because I just didn't want to push it down the field. But most of those guys are running because, man, it's fun. It's fun to be in the game and run down the field and, you know, you look around and see, you know, who kept up with me or who am I keeping up with or who's going to be ahead of me.
I think I would kind of liken it to baseball players running to first base even though they're going to ground out for sure. Like,
Even if the play beats
him to the base, they'll still run to the base, tap it, then go to the dugout, even though they've been out for like seven steps.
Right. So all of that. And I think it's even more so than that. It's more like after you make that, if you get that third out, running into the dugout, you know, because you're either up next or whatever. And it's looking around and you'll see this too. The goal line is the thing. When they get out there, watch for this. Sometimes they do this. When they get to the goal line, that's the finish line. And that's, you know. So when you see them, like, they'll even lean for the tape sometimes. So, yeah, you're right. They keep running. They don't really have to. And they keep running. Even
interesting observation.
And it's one way, too, to stay warm. Stay supple. And, you know, because you're standing over on the sidelines for a long series.
Words to live by. Stay supple.
Yeah, so
take that one to the bank.
It's a great way to just stay loose and stay ready to come back in for either the punt team or the punt coverage team or the punt return team. So, it's a way for those guys to get out and get active because they stand on the sideline between series.
We're going to go back to the phones here at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. I'm going to say hello to Judy in Buffalo. Judy, how you doing today?
Good, thank you. In response to your question, I think that if Starr is healthy, the fact that he's in the lineup could mean that our pass rush will be much improved. because I really think that the only way we're going to be able to handle New England is to threaten their quarterback.
Yeah, and I think we know Star draws that attention. And I, you know, Steve mentioned this, I want to say it was either earlier this week or late last week, that Star has been a bigger factor in the pass rush himself, not just, you know, holding up people or tying up blockers. He's factored into the pass rush as well this season. So, yeah, I think your point is well taken, Judy. He is important, and I was arguing on his behalf as well at the outset of the show. So I'm in the boat with you on that. Just based maybe more on the opponent they're facing this week than anything else. I mean, look, all these guys that are hopefully coming back and in the lineup Monday night are going to help. I mean, we're not kidding ourselves. What we're arguing here is degrees of help at this point. And I just think with this opponent and the type of offensive front that they have, if you can have your most physical interior defensive lineman on the field, that's going to help you a lot. It's going to help you a lot.
Yeah, it's just one more guy that's really effective against the run as well. For all three of those guys, Star, Lotulelei, John Feliciano, and Spencer Brown, it's adding guys to your depth chart, but at the top of your depth chart. That's a big difference from losing depth from behind, like Tommy Doyle. Certainly you'd like to have him available. He's, you know, he's the best option. He's there for a reason, but he's not supposed to take any snaps. In a perfect world, Star Lotulelei, Spencer Brown, John Feliciano, those guys should be taking maybe 100% of the snaps. Star probably not. He'll probably take 50% because of the rotation of the defensive line. But for those offensive linemen, that's 40% of your offensive line that gets added right to the top. And that's a big difference.
Yeah.
In a 150 play game or maybe an 85 play game for your offense. Those guys may take 85 snaps.
Yeah. So.
That's big.
Yeah. They'll be on the field for sure. And, you know, as we've talked about, Feliciano and Brown are kind of the attitude guys, the energy guys on that offensive line. They're tone setters. Back to the phones, though, and to Patrick in Rochester. We go from Richard to Patrick. Patrick, what do you have? Patrick, are you there, sir?
Yes, I am.
All right. What do you got for us?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes.
You're on. Go ahead.
No. The Bills don't need to change their defense.
Okay.
I think, if anything, the safeties, maybe extra safety, maybe on a third down here and there.
Okay.
All
right, Patrick, you have to turn down your radio. I'm sorry. We got to let you go here. Yeah, when we call or we pick up the line, that's the time for you to turn down the radio because the radio is on delay, and you're going to get the echo effect, 5 to 7 second delay. And if you're listening with one ear to the radio while trying to make your point, you're not going to be super effective. But in essence, Patrick was saying, don't change the defense. Throw in a few little wrinkles if you want, but he's responding to a caller we had earlier on the show who was saying, let's see if we can play a little 3-4, throw him a real curveball. I think the only curveball you'll be throwing is at your own players on defense.
Yeah, that brings into question their ability to execute it at a high level. And, you know, that's – and for whatever benefit you get from the Patriots, you know, being surprised by the fact that you're running it, it's going to be counteracted by your inability to perform. Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's move along. We go to Scott in Jamestown next. Scott, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, I hope the Bills win. And I like Josh Allen, and I went there a couple times. And I just want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
All right, Merry Christmas to you too. Thanks, Scott. Yeah, I think we're all hoping they win. That's pretty safe to say. And, you know, we've talked about the magnitude of this game already, Steve, just from the standpoint of the division. Forget about playoff seeding right now. I think the division has to be priority number one. And that was the mantra last year. We got to win our division, secure a home playoff berth, and go that way.
Right.
I don't think it's changed this year. You got to get the division, and to get the inside track on the division title, you got to win this game. You win this game. The most important thing you do is you hand New England their second loss in the division. More importantly, you make yourself 4-0 in the division. And division record after head-to-head is the next tiebreaker if you happen to be tied with a team within your division. So it's a pivotal swing that you can enact with a victory on Monday night. You go to 4-0 in the division, you drop the Patriots to 2-2 in the division, and it becomes very, very hard for them to catch you in the division tiebreaker race.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. Neither one of these teams is going to be crippled by a loss, but it's going to be hard to win the division because they're still going to be right in the thick of the wild card, but you're going to have to win games down the stretch. And this is one of the two of these teams is going to be, you know, nicked by a loss here. But even so, with the schedule remaining for them, I still think both these two teams, the Patriots and the Bills, they're both playoff teams. They are both playoff teams.
Yeah. You would expect both of them.
I expect
playing
both these teams
late
to
in
be,
January.
Yes, I expect both of them to be playing into week 19. You know, what their seeding is, I don't know. But they're just both of them are just too good to get shut out like that. We'll just have to wait and see how this game goes. But, man, oh, man, the road becomes clear if you win this game.
Yeah. Dan in Grand Island, Dave in Amherst, Jimmy in KC, hang tight. We will get to you in the next segment. We have to break here, but more of your phone calls coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Barry's Ice Cream has launched a new flavor this week. Hey, Sunday! You get ice cream with salty caramel swirls and brownie dough pieces. Man, that sounds good. It's available in stores now. I am a big fan of the nougat. I'm just going to say that. Nougat. Why have people not put nougat in ice cream sooner than this?
Let me just ask, what is nougat?
It's the good stuff that's in a Milky Way.
The good stuff in a Milky Way. Okay.
Or a Three Musketeers. Although, a Three Musketeers is essentially a Milky Way light. Because they rob you of the caramel experience. It's basically a Milky Way minus the caramel. So
right.
it's like the Milky Way took
both
a day
of
off and they called it a Three
both
Musketeers.
Both of them are substandard to the Snickers bar because the Snickers adds peanuts at the top. And
I'm not a big nut in my candy bar guy.
Yeah, well, you're...
But I am a big nougat in my ice cream guy, so I'll be in line for AA Sunday.
You must have been raised by wolves.
I'm like also that. A little partial to the brownie blitz flavor as well, as you might imagine. So,
yeah.
But there's brownie dough pieces in this as well.
Let me just ask you this. Ice cream is a winter treat.
I'm just going to tell you.
Against?
That is a year-round attraction. Are you kidding me?
I would agree.
Anytime brownie is involved in an ice cream flavor, I am on board. It's a good thing.
Oh, really? That's your thing, huh?
It's a good thing.
Are you a brownie guy? Brownie?
come again?
Are you just a plain, like a cut it out of it, like the little squares out of the baking pan?
Oh, yeah. My wife is a giant brownie fan, so she will make them frequently.
She got the recipe of all recipes?
She's big on sticking some peanut butter in the brownie dough, in the batter.
See, that's a little unnecessary for
me.
Brownie's a brownie.
Chocolate and peanut butter is a favorite combination of hers. This is how far in we are. She got that. Have you ever seen that brownie pan that has the dividers?
Yes.
So every piece is a corner?
Yes.
God bless the person that invented that. I mean, honest to Pete, that is just pure American ingenuity at its best.
That is.
You know what I mean?
When
we're standing on the shoulders of our forefathers and, you know, people of great sound mind and ingenuity. It's the person that made the brownie divider. So every piece is a corner. Because those are the first pieces that go. You know it.
No, nobody can maximize junk food like the United States of America.
God bless it. You know,
you're
100% right,
Steve. I'm
telling you. The brownie divider that goes in the tray, best thing that was ever given to a brownie.
There you go.
Recipe. It's fantastic.
See, I've always
because when you don't have that, everybody's stealing the corners first and the edges, right?
I'm not,
that little crispiness?
I'm a center.
You're a gooey guy.
I'm a gooey guy. I am absolutely a gooey guy.
I am not.
Even in my cookies, I'm a gooey
just
guy.
Just a little bit of that crunch on the outside.
I get that. Now, listen, there's no bad brownies. There are just some that you may like better than others. So let's get that out of the way.
I couldn't agree more.
Right. So I'm with you on the divide. If that's your thing, you got the divider thing is a like that, that's like got to be a stocking stuffer as soon as
absolutely. It's a game changer.
Absolutely.
It's an absolute game changer. Now, have you tried the brownie brittle? Have you seen that?
The brownie brittle? No. That is foreign to me.
Yeah, and I don't think, and you being a gooey guy, I don't think you would like it because it's,
well, like
it's obviously
brittle.
Very crispy.
I like peanut brittle. Oh. So is that what it is? Or
you got to get your hands on some of
what's
that.
What's brownie brittle?
It's basically a
chocolate
crispy,
peanut brittle.
A crispy, thin brownie, and they'll even throw chocolate chips into the hard bake. So it's almost like chocolate chips replace the peanuts in peanut brittle, except it's brownie batter.
Is this a homemade
thing? You can get it in a resealable bag.
Oh, really?
At your local grocery store,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, you got to try that. I'm surprised you haven't found that.
Mm-mm. Oh, that's news to me. I've never seen it.
You have been given.
I don't think I've even seen it.
You've been given an assignment. Now, I need you to come through.
What is this new technology? Is it brand new? Is it?
It's been around. I mean, we've had it in our house for years. So
really?
Oh, well, I just told you. That
must be
the brownie aficionados that live in the brown household. So
I can see that. You would be ahead of the game compared to us.
That's right.
Yeah.
We do have to get back to the phones. There is a show to run here. Sorry to get off on the brownie tangent. We just got all excited about the Hey Sunday flavor. But we go back to the phones, and we lead off here with Dan in Grand Island. Dan, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live. Set the show straight, will you, please?
Yeah. Good afternoon, guys. I agree with that riddle. That is amazing.
Isn't it awesome? Steve, you got to get some.
I guess I do.
What I'd like to ask Steve is, when a player like Fromm gets traded or claimed in this instance, who takes care of the house he's leaving and who gets him a new place to sleep and a place he's going to?
Now, there is a good question. You don't hear that one often, but it's a good one. Thanks for the call, Dan. Appreciate it.
Well, unfortunately for some of the young players, you're in an adult world now. You carry your own water.
Yeah.
You get that done. Yeah, that's the way it goes.
When
you got to do it.
When you're drafted by a team or signed by a team, they have player development people that help you find a house when you come here to Buffalo.
Yeah, plus, I mean, when you first get here, it's customary to put you in a hotel for a minute.
Yes.
Right? So you do that, and then, you know, depending on, like, Fromm going to the Giants.
They got him in a hotel.
Yeah. It might be crazy talk for him to even think about getting an apartment. He may be out of there in a week.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just – it's –
he's living out of a bag for
yeah,
the next
he's
few weeks.
Living out of his duffel bag, and he's in a hotel. And it's the same for – I mean, I didn't even look for a place – my rookie season, I didn't even look for a place to live until I saw my name on the roster list, and we had a game the next week. You know what I mean? I
so
mean,
you were renting.
I was in a hotel.
Oh, you were in a hotel. Okay.
And, you know, then that kind of – the team says, okay, training camp's over. The cleaning crew throws you out of the hotel, right? I mean, so you got to go find a place. So, you do that. But, yeah, it's up to you. You're an adult now. That's why, in a lot of ways, college is easier than the pros.
Oh,
you don't have
gosh.
You got food, you got clothes mostly, and you got
housing.
A place to eat, place to sleep.
Yeah, you got housing.
Place to live, housing. As a pro player, and I remember we used to laugh. Back in the day when I came out as a rookie, there were guys on my team that were like rookie free agents from big-time schools like Oklahoma, right? Like these big-time schools.
Yeah, yeah.
Their life was worse as a pro athlete than it was as a college kid because they had to get their own car, had to get a place to live, had to pay for their own food, had to pay rent, all the, you know, buy groceries. They
were lost.
It was like a full-time job being an adult. And they had to play pro football. So, and it was costing them money. And they weren't making as much money as a pro as it cost the school to give them all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So, they have like 10 extra bucks out of pay. Because you're making, back then they were making 50 grand, which was good money in 1980s, whatever, 50 grand. But that's it.
Make it last.
They were, they were like, yuck. And then they only got paid during season.
Yeah. Crazy.
So, yeah, they took a pay cut to come to the pros back in the day.
Let's go back to the phones. We go to Dave in Amherst. Dave, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
Yeah, with Mac Jones being not too mobile, in fact, probably not mobile at all, and he doesn't have the best long ball, okay? I've seen him overthrow a lot of deep passes. Do you think the Bills can blitz a little more than they have been doing? And can the safeties come down a little? All his passes seem to be the short game, which works for them, but I'm just wondering if we can blitz a little more with Mac Jones, or is he just too smart to figure that out and dump
well,
it into a back?
Yeah, that's the problem. The problem is he does get the ball out quickly. I believe he's got the fifth fastest snap-to-release time, 2.71 seconds, which for a rookie is outstanding, especially a rookie that has a completion percentage of over 70%. Steve and I were talking about this earlier in the week. What is the approach for this Bills defense now that you do not have Tre'Davious White? How much help do you feel you need to give the back end and the guys with the coverage assignments by helping them with the guys up front? Is there an end game in that, or does Mac Jones get the ball out so quickly that it renders that approach moot? The stats to this point would say it's going to be kind of tough to get to him with as quickly as he gets the ball out. So
yeah,
we'll have to see.
Plus, they can use play action as well really effectively because they do have a run game that they're committed to. And all of that stuff together, Brownie and I have been talking, like, you got to think, too, at some point it's going to be a game about getting a batted pass by that defensive line. That's going to be as good as, you know, as a – maybe not as good as a sack, but it's certainly going to be as an incomplete pass and a down given up. It's hard to get there on Mac Jones – when the ball comes out so quick. And I wouldn't be surprised. The Patriots know this is a really good defense they're facing. They're going to have a plan on either A, getting the ball out of there quick, or play action, giving him some time, or maybe they'll do something they don't think the Bills expect him to do. Drop him back and let go the long ball. Mm-hmm. Now, he can make all the throws, certainly maybe not with the velocity that Josh Allen can, but he can get the ball down the field.
He can fit it in there.
And here's the thing that Mac Jones is going to do that they didn't do a year ago. They're not going to miss open throws. Cam Newton last year was throwing the ball in the dirt to open receivers. He was overthrowing or missing guys when they were running through the Bills' defense open. They're not going to miss those throws this year. And that's this offense for the Patriots is going to be a real handful for the Bills to stop because of Jones' ability to get the ball out, get it out accurately, and make the right decisions quick.
Yeah.
So it's going to be up to the Bills to either bat the balls down or defend them in the back end quick. You can certainly say they're going to maybe squat on the routes because the ball does come out quick. They can't go that deep. But there's nothing that says you can't lob it out long and let them run under it. That means the ball comes out just as quick.
Yeah. And I sold Mac Jones short. He actually averages 2.61 seconds. From snap to release, so
they're doing everything
he's
even right
faster than I.
They're doing everything right with him because that's what he's good at. He can deliver the short to intermediate ball very quickly, makes quick, easy, quick reads to the and picks the right guy to go to. So he's throwing it to open guys, and the thing the Patriots have set them apart in these last six game winning streak is run after catch.
Yeah,
their guys catch it short, run long. They're good at it, and. They are a formidable offense.
All right, we got to take a break here, but when we come back, Mark and West Seneca, we got to still get to Jimmy and KC. Jimmy, you'll be leading us off. You've been holding the longest. Ben and Amherst, hang tight. We'll get back to all of you in the next segment. More of your phone calls next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Rocketing into hour number two on a Wednesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. One Bills Live is the show. The Bills are the subject, as you might have guessed. Big Monday night tilt. Bills. Patriots. AFC East clash, and we're here to discuss it with you, along with the added notes from yesterday's press conferences, chiefly from head coach Sean McDermott, with the news that Star Lotulelei and Spencer Brown are no longer on the COVID reserve list, John Feliciano back practicing, though still on IR, provided things go well, the assumption is he would come off. And does Isaiah McKenzie make a return to the lineup after being a healthy scratch last week? All of these players could be returning to the lineup Monday against the Patriots. Who might have the biggest impact? Let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Back to the phones we go. And Jimmy in KC has been waiting patiently. What do you have for us, Jimmy?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing today?
Good.
Hey, so, you know, I know the last few weeks everybody's been kind of, you know, dogging on our running game, which is deservedly correct. You know, one thing I like them to be is I don't need our team to be a great running team. We just need to be a little more efficient. And I would like for us to kind of steal some plays, you know, some running plays from other teams that run the ball better. But last night I came across a stat that I was not aware of. I saw it, and you guys might be able to double check, but Josh Allen is like leading the league in passing yards that are without the yak. And our team is like ranked 26th in run after catches. And I was really surprised about that. And I think that could be an issue that, you know, that we need to address is trying to how we try to get those yak yardage that we were getting last year. So yeah, that's what I have for you guys today, but I was kind of shocked to see that.
Yeah. I don't know that they ranked super high in that category last year, if memory serves. So I don't know that it's necessarily a new issue, but I will say this. It does make me wonder if, you know, you saw Marquez Stevenson get on the field last year, made his NFL debut as a returner for the Bills. McKenzie was a healthy scratch, but Breida has been added and has seen more playing time of late. You wonder if the yards after the catch statistic is something they're aware of and prompting them to say, we need to get more speed on the field. So maybe with the thought of by doing that, we enhance our chances to get more yards after the catch. And then that means instead of an 11-play, 78-yard drive, it's a 6-play, 90-yard drive, and we're in the end zone.
Right. And you're right. And it is, I don't know if it's a little bit of philosophy or what. I don't think it speaks to the wide receivers or, you know, their abilities. I think it speaks to the scheme and the things that Josh throws. I think they throw routes that, you know, and you can see, you can picture it too, you know, guys going out of bounds on the sidelines, hook routes to Cole Beasley where he falls forward for the first down. We don't see many passes completed for the Bills that end up with long runs. It just doesn't happen that way for the Bills. The last time you can ever think about seeing was in the Monday night game in New England last year where Steph Diggs catches the crossing route late, turns it up, and that's when Steve Levy was like, yeah, it's taillights time, right, when Diggs runs into the end zone. It just doesn't happen in our offense a lot. Don't know why that is, except that I think it probably has to do with what Josh does and what he does well, and that's put the ball on somebody. He doesn't lead guys very much.
And throw them open.
He doesn't throw them open. I think that's one of the reasons his long ball isn't as prevalent as it might be for some other guys is because he has a hard time throwing it to an area and letting the guy run in under it. He needs to throw it on him and put it on him. Now, he can do that with timing and catch the guy in stride, but he doesn't really throw guys open like that. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, you can see in statistics like the ones you're talking about. You know, he'll put the ball on the guy and it'll be a completion, but the guy's like, you know, catching it with his body standing there instead of moving and running. So I think that's a nod to what Josh does well and what he doesn't, not so much what the wide receivers or anything like that. And I think it has to do with Brian Daboll's ability to see that and maximize it. And by maximizing that, you know, you minimize some other things like yards after catch.
Yeah. I'll see if I can pull up where they currently rank right now. I believe I saw it a week or two ago. They were down in the teens, the high teens. So I'll see if they've improved or if they've still kind of stayed where they were the last time I checked. Mark in West Seneca is next. What do you have for us, Mark?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. An observation I had from last Thursday's game was Tyler Bass with his kickoffs, dropping the ball between the goal line and the 5-yard line on kickoffs. And the coverage teams coming down and swarming the receivers. I don't think they had a good drive start from anything better than their own 19-yard line. I'm just Steve's observations, because he played special teams, do you think the Bills, was that by design? Because I think Tyler Bass, I'm sure, can kick the ball through the end zone, especially in a dome stadium, anytime he wants to. Is this by design, and the Bills saw something in the coverage of the Saints?
Yeah, it is by design. You saw later when the game was out of reach, Bass just booted it through the back of the end zone. And I have said, and I think it was probably a matchup thing that the Bills thought they could get away with. Kick the ball high outside the numbers between the 5 and the 5-yard line and the goal line and get down there and cover it. And it worked very well. They kept the Saints pinned down deep. And I've said, and I'll say this, mostly probably the ability to do that was given confidence to try because they were indoors. When you try and kick the ball outside the numbers and you're out in the elements, sometimes it ends up going out of bounds, and then it's a bad thing. They get the ball in the 40. So when it's unpredictable like it is when you're out in the elements with the wind whipping around in Highmark Stadium or any other outdoor stadium, you're very reticent to try and do something like that because of the elements pushing the ball out of bounds or maybe back to the middle of the field or whatever. But when you're indoors and the conditions are perfect, you can do things like they did against the Saints. And I think there's no question it was a game plan thing because later on, all Bass did when the game was out of reach was back up and booted out of the end zone. The thought being, you're willing to do that when the game's in doubt, going in there and try and get the field position advantage.
Yeah.
And the reason you don't do it later in the game after you got the game in hand is because you have no chance of giving up a long return when the ball is not being returned. So that's the strategy behind it. During the game, when it's in doubt, you want to play the field position battle. You'll take the chance on a long return by giving your guys a chance to go down and kick it, cover it. And as the game wears on, just boot it out and don't take the risk.
I looked up yards after the catch for the Bills. They are 25th in the league right now with total yards after the catch, 954 yards after the catch thus far this season. That ranks 25th in the league. Yards after the catch per reception, the Bills are last in the league, 9 yards after the catch per reception on average. So that's why they are down. And I think Steve's comment about ball location, throwing receivers open, that's really not a major part of Josh's game. He puts it on them, and then whatever they get after that is usually gravy, unless we're talking about a now route to the flat or something like that.
Right.
That's different. But when he's in the intermediate areas, yards after the catch are not plentiful. They're not.
Right.
Unless somebody's behind the defense and they beat him. You know, Kansas City game, we saw some of that. Dawson Knox gets behind Sorensen, goes another 10, 11. But even then, he's only going another 12 yards into the end zone.
Yeah, and even the Saints game when Dawson Knox caught the 4th and 2 for the touchdown, he catches it, the DB falls down and he goes for all those yards. Gabe Davis here, we're seeing a highlight here, the Gabe Davis
12 yards down, after the catch there.
3rd and 2, he catches it and runs.
Most of the yards are air yards.
Right, right.
So,
and you can do that when your quarterback's got an arm like Josh, too.
Exactly.
You can put it on him.
So it's not a catastrophic thing that they don't rank high in this category because they have a quarterback who can cover most of the yardage with his arm. The guys, the yards after the catch aren't as important as they are, say, in New England, where a lot of the completions are of the shorter variety, and they need their receiving targets to get yards after the catch to increase the gains. So very, very different in that way in terms of passing game approach between the Bills and the Patriots. Back to the phones and to Kevin in Rochester. What do you have for us, Kevin? You're on One Bills Live.
I think that yesterday you talked about players who were, maybe not a factor in other games, and I think that the punter and the place kicker will play an important part, especially because it's a home game, and so they understand how to deal with the wind.
Yeah.
And yesterday you had somebody ask about why some teams line it up straight, left or right. I think that's going to be an important factor in Monday night's game.
Yeah. Lining up how? What he's?
I wasn't sure about the last part there. Yeah. I think he meant lining up on the hash for kicks.
Oh, I got you.
There is going to be wind in the forecast, 10 to 20 miles per hour out of the west-southwest for Monday night's game. That's the early forecast anyway. Snow on Monday, but early in the day. Not supposed to be snow at night, but, you know, with the lake effect snow machine, you just never know, especially when the wind's blowing. So right. We'll see what Monday night brings. The kicking game, I think, is going to be of paramount importance here. The Patriots, and we talked to Matt Chatham yesterday, former Patriots linebacker and current analyst of the Patriots for New England Sports Network, and he said that they, if you look at all of the hidden yardage that exists on special teams, the Patriots have advantages in almost every game they've played in spades. Mm-hmm. If you look at the opponent's average drive start, the Patriots are near the top of the league in terms of that.
They got great coverage guys. It's not just Matt Slater and Gunner on punt team. They got a lot of quality guys out there covering kicks. Their punter and kicker are always.
And Gunnar Olszewski leads the league in punt return average right now.
Olszewski gets what every yard that's coming to him and makes good decisions. They hit on all cylinders, and I think that's one of the things that special teams is these days, you know, even compared to the days when I played special teams, is a team these days, and it's been this way since the early 80s when the rosters got to like 42, 43, 46 players, 45 players, 47 players on game day. Once it got to that level, a new position group was formulated. And that position group is special teams core players, guys who are linebackers, DBs, tight ends, wide receivers, running backs, guys who can play special teams. There's, you know, a handful or more, usually like eight guys, that are your hardcore special teams participants. And Patriots have got a bunch of quality guys there, and they hit on a lot of cylinders and are able to execute a lot of things. Don't forget, you know, this is a team that has pulled some special teams stunts on the Bills in the past and gotten good production out of it. But they ratchet up the pressure with every little bit. If you can think about it, over the course of if both teams punt four times in a game and you're gaining 10 yards of better field position than your opponent is, that's eight. It's like 80 yards of difference, 10 yards every one of those kicking plays that you get that your opponent doesn't, or you take from your opponent and you get from your opponent when they, you know. So it's 80 yards of hidden yardage. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Bills and Patriots have both been good in this category. I still remember Coach McDermott was praising the kickoff team from Thursday night's game. He was really happy with their performance.
Yeah, they
in terms of kick coverage.
They had a really good day of special teams against the Saints.
And right now, looking at it, the Bills currently, as a receiving team, third in the league in average drive start, first in the AFC, behind only Minnesota and Seattle. New England, seventh in the league in average drive start. So the Bills' average drive start is their 26.5-yard line. For New England, it's their 25.8-yard line. And then flipping it around, their coverage teams, Buffalo, fifth in the league in average drive start for their opponent, the 23.5-yard line. New England, eighth in the league at the 24-yard line. So they're pretty comparable, but the Bills have been better in that area.
One issue that gives me pause and makes me worry is that I think Matt Hawk
is a very slow
get-off time, and the Patriots are going to know that. They played against him when he was in Miami last year, as did the Bills. The Bills have got to have a plan for Matt Hawk to be protected in his punts. And he's got to know he's going to have to get it off. Because I would say it is for sure that the Patriots are going to attempt to block at least one, if not more than that. They may have it on their docket to go for every single punt time the Bills punt. They're going to try for a block. With Olszewski in the back, he's going to make good decisions. They'll field the ball. They won't lose anything that way. It would not surprise me.
Yeah. We do want to get some comments passed along to you from the coaching staff who addressed the media late yesterday. And we want to begin with defensive coordinator and assistant head coach Leslie Frazier, who for the first time since the injury was announced, addressed the loss of cornerback Tre'Davious White from the defensive lineup.
You know, obviously, a big part of what we do on defense, he allows us to do so many things because of his talent and how smart he is, how hard he works, and just how talented he is. He's a matchup guy, and it's hard to find those guys in our league. But he's allowed us to do some things on defense because of his ability to eliminate other people's number one receivers. So there's some big shoes to fill. I think Dane Jackson is one of those guys who will step up, and he's the next man up, and he'll do a good job for us. But to say that he will play at the level of Tre'Davious, that would be, you know, misleading for sure.
And that's going to change how they play defense, as we mentioned earlier in the show, because Dane, despite all his credentials and some of his promising ability, he's just not the same caliber, doesn't have the same experience, doesn't have all of the accolades, and, you know, hasn't started against the Patriots receiving corps. Quite frankly, I don't know that anybody on the roster has, in light of who they put on the field this year compared to last year. But, you know, Dane's just not going to be able to do the varied amount of things that Tre'Davious can do to help this defense. And even, Tre'Davious gives him a lot more latitude with the play calls.
Even if he could, coaches don't know if he's got to make him believe that he can. You know,
right.
It's
the trust
gonna
factor.
It's going to take time for him to prove that. Now, they certainly have things they're confident in him doing because they've had him in the building for two seasons, a better part of 2 years now. So they know what he's capable of. And Dane Jackson, and we said this yesterday, I like the way he plays with confidence. You know,
he plays with an edge too.
He plays
a lot
with
of those
bit pit of
players
edge.
Do.
Yeah, he's got a little grit. I love that about him. That doesn't mean it's going to serve him that well against the Patriots this week or whatever. But I think the guy does do some things well. They came out right at him with a double move in the Saints game, and he almost got beat. Except Simeon threw it out of bounds. And you could tell by his body language, he was like, he frustrated himself by getting beat like that. He's got some things he's got to learn, but I do know this. He's not going to back off. I mean, I think he's got that about him that he's going to, like, if they beat him once, he's going to come up, line up again, and say, let's go.
Yeah, he doesn't get intimidated. He knows full well there's going to be a bullseye on his back in this game Monday night, but that doesn't intimidate him at all, knowing the kind of kid he is. And here is Coach Frazier on the confidence he has in putting Dane Jackson out there on Monday night.
I think it has a lot to do with the composure that he plays with. You know, things don't get too big for him. We saw that in his rookie year when he had to step in and play in some tough situations at times. And even this year when he's had to come in the ball game, even the game on Thursday night when he stepped in, I mean, he has real good poise and a good feel for the game. And I think that helps him not to get overly concerned or to stress himself where he's not able to play up to the level that we expect him to. So just that overall composure and that confidence that he has. And he's a talented guy as well.
And, Steve, I know you've mentioned this on this show, that, you know, the Bills' defensive philosophy is rooted in a lot of zone-type scheme, but they have played more man this season. The question is, does that continue now that Tre'Davious White is no longer a part of the equation?
Well, I don't think they're going to transform fast. I think they'll work into it. I think they'll still ask Dane Jackson to hang in there, particularly, I think, against the Patriots wideouts. This isn't like playing the Tennessee Titans with AJ Brown and Julio Jones. Although the receiving core of the Patriots is quality, they also depend on their tight ends a little more than other teams do, and they use the running game a little more. So I think
– I don't know that there's a true number one, really.
Right, exactly. So I think that makes it a little bit of a different animal. So the zone man mix may be different with the Patriots than it will be next week with the Bucs going forward.
That'll be a test next week.
So in this game, though
– might be all right.
Maybe. But I think this is still with Mac Jones throwing the football the way he is, sometimes you want to go man just to have somebody there when he's, you know, trying to fit it in a window rather than just throwing to an area on time.
Almost like the approach they had with Tua in week two. Shut off the first read and see how he reacts. Is he patting the ball? Is he chucking it away?
If you can get at him and make him pull it down and look to his second read and have to hold the ball a little bit, maybe get into him a little bit, maybe it starts to rattle him a bit. But to this point, he's been pretty cool about it. You know, he's thrown 16 TDs, 9 interceptions. I think you've got to get in his vision and make him come off his first read and give your pass rush a chance. And I think that starts at the back end. And without Tre'Davious White, it remains to be seen how well the Bills can do that.
All right, we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll get to more of your phone calls as we're asking you of the players anticipated to return to the lineup Monday night. Who do you think is going to have the biggest impact in the game of those returners? You can let us know at 803-0550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet, which we'll get to as well. When we come back here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. One Bills Live is the show. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, your hosts, here until 3. And taking phone calls at 803-0550, which is where we return at this juncture. And we go to Jeff in Jamestown next. Jeff, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Okay, I got 2 points I'd like to make, one on offense, one on defense.
Okay.
And then an evaluation I may have or may not have noticed about Josh.
Okay.
When he's a shotgun. First off, offense, I think our linemen coming back and fortifying, you know, the 5 linemen, I think that'll be huge because the guy that the Patriots played last week, I can't remember his name, but he just ran them up and down. Didn't they have, like, 2 running backs that run for 100 yards apiece?
They did. They had 264 total, I believe.
And if that guy hadn't fumbled, who knows what would have happened.
Right.
So I think with you know that with our running backs, you know, especially the new guy there,
Matt Breida,
speed, Breida, yeah. And on defense, I think Starr will be huge because Oliver's already been playing out of his mind. So you know, because their running backs are running back by committee as well for the Patriots, so they don't run laterally as well as they do between the tackles. So with Oliver and Lutulue in there, I think that'll be really good. And my final point, I noticed in the games where Josh is in the shotgun, his cadence will be like, hut, 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 hut. But then when he says set hut is when the ball snapped. Have you guys noticed that?
No, because, you know, when we're watching the game, we're not always privy to TV audio, especially the home games. I have no access to television audio whatsoever. So it's not something that that's readily available to me. That's interesting that you say that, but the cadence will usually change week to week. And that's done for obvious reasons, because if opponents can pull that off a tape, it's on you to change it so they don't get a beat on you. So I would trust that they would be doing that.
If you're noticing it, somebody on the Bills staff's noticed it.
Yeah.
So there you have
Appreciate the scouting report, but I'm confident the guys inside these walls have it
people,
handled. And ladies.
They grind through the tape and pick stuff like that up.
It's a fine-tooth comb.
Oh, you can't hide anything. And don't so if there is a tell, it's probably there, and not only do the Bills should be aware of it, the Patriots are definitely aware of it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and if there's one the other way, the Bills are aware of it, and the Patriots are probably aware of it.
Back to the phones, and to Dave down in Florida. Dave, what do you have for us?
How you doing today, guys?
Good.
All right, listen, I'm very curious about this COVID outbreak again. Who tells the is it the union that tells everybody they don't have to get vaccinations?
Well, it was collectively bargained between the union and the league.
It was.
The COVID protocols for the regular season were collectively bargained between the league and the Players Association.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was a lousy one because I think somebody's spreading it. And my second thing is I'm not too worried about the New England Patriots quarterback. And I think Jackson is going to take care of the White's position, and their quarterback can't throw 20 yards or more if he watch all his passes. That's all I got, guys. Have a nice Christmas, Merry Christmas, and see you in the playoffs.
Yeah, to you too, Dave. Thanks for the call. I respectfully disagree on his.
I'm probably a little bit more wary of the Patriots than Dave, obviously.
Yeah,
is.
Dave's supremely
six
confident.
Games in a row, they're playing really good, and they're playing better or as well as the Colts were playing.
They're playing more consistent football than the Bills are playing.
Right. They're week in, week out, they're playing better.
Right now.
Right now, or as good as, you know, the Bills are playing, and where the Bills have been up and down a little bit. So, now, granted, both teams have had issues with player availability. So, I get that. But, yeah, the Patriots have been more consistent over the past 6 weeks than the Bills have. And, you know, you say there are reasons for all of it.
I will say,
you know,
I like the law of averages that often comes into play with NFL games. Teams are on a hot streak for a while. The law of averages in this league eventually wins the day.
It's a hard
And game. I like that the Patriots have won six in a row playing supremely efficient football because the law of averages says that they are due for a little bit of a downturn in that efficiency, right. A little slip up, if you will. And I am ready to buy.
The Bills finished the season last year with 8 wins, 2 playoff wins, and 6 regular season wins.
And the law of averages caught up with them as they did not play their best game against the Chiefs.
Right. That's
right. The law of averages is coming home to roost very soon for the Patriots.
And actually,
I don't think they can keep this up.
Yeah. You may hope they can't, but you know, we'll see.
They don't make a lot of mistakes.
They don't make
mistakes.
I'll
say that.
That's the thing, and that's the frustrating part about it.
That's how they win 80% of their games.
The Bills cannot give plays or breaks or advantages to the Patriots with mistakes and bad play. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't.
Can't live, survive in the NFL that way.
If throwing the ball away and punting the ball away is better than taking a bad sack that puts you out of field goal range, or fumbling the ball on a sack strip, or throwing an interception, or whatever. So as long as you keep it within the lines, don't turn it over, give your defense a chance to, you know, stop them with a long field, you know, you got a better chance of hanging in there with them. But as soon as you start turning it over, fumbling it away, giving up a long kick return, giving up a block kick, giving up a surprise onside kick to the Patriots, it's going to be a close enough game where you're going to be in striking distance. But you can't turn it over and make mistakes.
No. Let's go back to the phones. I believe we've got, let me see who we have here. Clarence in Buffalo. Clarence, what do you got for us? You're on One Bills Live.
How you doing today, gentlemen?
Good.
I have a question, and it's regarding something that Steve mentioned earlier in the week. In regards to when the Josh Allen was hit below, below his knees, and the penalty wasn't called. And my question is, what is the responsibility of the general managers to put this before the league and let them know what transpired? And is there any repercussions done to the referees behind that?
Yeah, so here's how it goes, Clarence. First and foremost, each team each week submits a review card for that officiating crew. They send it into the league. If they have issues with calls that they thought were either A, not made, or officiated inappropriately, they can file what amounts to a complaint to the league's officiating office. The league will review those. And what are the repercussions? The repercussions are they call back and say, yeah, we're sorry, we got that wrong. Now, there are, if officials receive poor enough grades over the course of their assignments in a given season, there can be demotions. That has happened. They can be reassigned to a lesser, you know, assistant referee role. Maybe they go from an umpire to a back judge if they really struggle and have problems. Phil Luckett is the guy that stands out to me. He couldn't even get the coin toss right. The next year, he went from being a head official to a back judge. So it does happen.
He asked for it, though, as well, because he was, you know.
It's too much for me.
Yeah, he's like.
That coin flip's tough. Well,
plus, he got so vilified for messing the coin flip up. He's like, I don't need that headache. Just put me back in the, you know. Yeah. So
put me in deep center field.
Yes, there's that. But, yes, there is a protocol for getting the officials to call, you know, like you can say, what this play. This play, this play, this play, and this play. Usually some teams have a dozen or more plays.
In some a given week.
In every game. Some teams have like five plays. But every team has some that they send to the league and say, what about this? Why was this not called? Why was this called? Or what happened here? Explain this to me. Why is it called here against this guy and not over here against this guy? Why did you say that was a good call and this one wasn't a good call? Uh-huh. What's going on? So they get clarification, and if the officials are found to be inconsistent or one way or the other, they're downgraded. And it, you know, and I don't know how egregious the downgrades are, but they certainly pick the guys to do Super Bowl and playoff games. They pick those guys on the fact that they've done better than other guys during the regular season.
And isn't Super Bowl typically the highest-rated officials, and they're all mashed together? Right? Don't they?
Yeah, they have done that in the past. Now, what they'll do is instead of doing strictly by that, they'll take the top group and they'll put
top
together
crew
top the top like top
graded
field, top line judge, top umpire, top
okay, head, top graded
all
officials.
Those guys. There'll be a handful of guys at the top of the lists. They'll take the top three or four and they'll mesh together the ones who have worked together before the most.
Okay.
For the Super Bowl. So you won't have guys, I've never worked with this guy, but you know what, I worked for 4 years together with you, and now we'll recapture some of that and we'll do our thing.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of that going on as well. That was when okay. Mike Pereira did it and Dean Blandino did it. I don't know how I did it with Alberto Riveron. Now it's a new guy, and I'm not even familiar with who the new guy is.
I think it's Walt Anderson, right?
Oh, you know, that's right. So they've got protocols in place, and they, you know, let's face it, the head coaches are the guys that pick the plays. Now, they may delegate the authority to say, hey, pick out some plays. And you see coaches on the sidelines, every last one of them picks out the little card, and they write something on the card, and they put it back in their pocket. Then you see over there, and they're writing on a little card, and that's some of the stuff they're writing down. Ask the officials about to explain this to me. What about this? What about that? And that's some of the things they write down on the sidelines, that plus a million other thoughts that cross their mind on the sidelines that they got to keep track of. So there is an enormous amount of effort put in by the football side of the NFL to get the officiating exactly where everybody wants it. And it all has to do with what I've been saying constantly, consistency.
Walt Anderson is the Senior Vice President of Officiating Training and Development, Perry Fuel. Former Bills defensive coordinator and interim head coach after Dick Turan got fired, senior vice president of officiating administration. So those are the new guys that were appointed this year. When we come back, I'm going to pose a question to Steve and see if he knows the answer. How many games have Spencer Brown and John Feliciano both played together in Buffalo's lineup this season? The number may surprise you. We'll have it next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, so the question posed to Steve here is, how many games has Spencer Brown and John Feliciano both started together on Buffalo's offensive line through their first 11 games this season? What say you, Steve Tasker?
Two games and change. Like, I don't know, Feliciano. I'll say three games.
It is two. They started two games together. As we know, Brown was... You did have it. Brown was not in the starting lineup the first 3 weeks.
Right.
Comes in week four, but Ike Butker started at left guard in that game. Then
Feliciano out?
Yeah, I can't remember what it was now. But then Feliciano started against Kansas City and Tennessee with Brown at right tackle. Those are the only two games where they have both been on the field simultaneously. 38 points and 31 points scored in those two games.
Kansas City, what other game?
Tennessee. Oh, 38 and 31 points scored. I like the sound of that.
I do too.
More to talk about tomorrow. Join us at 1. We'll see you then.